In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, Devil's Due publisher Josh Blaylock joins us to tell us about the status quo for the company, taking into account last year's economic dip and looking towards the future with digital comics. We're here to talk about the present, too. Two books in particular, Spartacus and the upcoming revamp of Jericho as they present season 3 of the 2-season television series that became a cult classic. Our conversation begins with Josh laying out the financial realities that hit him last year.
About a year ago, we were in the middle of, you know, kind of doing some restructuring. Simultaneously is when, you know, this fateful day in like October of last year set off sort of a chain of events that really, you know, really changed things for me as far as what we had to focus on and what we're going to do going forward. And right around the same time, you know, I wasn't the only one. I had a lot more people in the company, and we were doing a lot of stuff. And we sort of set ourselves up for this expansion kind of, I think, at the worst possible time anyone could have chosen to do so. So we get a lot of questions on certain titles, and sort of when you end up having to sort of end certain series or cancel certain series or put things on hiatus, you know, sometimes it just doesn't get announced properly, or maybe you don't want to announce it. Sometimes if it's a license or you're working with a partner, you have to be careful. You know, you can't come out and just say that something is over, and then by the time that you can, everyone pretty much just assumes it's dead anyway.
Okay.
So, you know, I wanted to kind of get the word out and let people know what we do have in the works, you know, where we're at with those things, and, you know, clarify on some titles that, you know, we're definitely done with. But, and usually I find that most people are already aware, but we still get questions every now and then. And I just, you know, what can happen is if you're not talking about there saying something about it is, you know, I don't want to build any ill will where people just think we just don't care about a certain book or just let it go. Or they feel invested in something, and because, you know, I mean, if you buy an issue of something and you start to partake in that and you plunk down your money for that, you know, and you don't see the other issue come out for a while or it just gets canceled, then, you know, you kind of feel a little gypped, and that's not what anyone's trying to do. So we still put out, you know, a sizable amount of product, and we're still one of the bigger publishers, even though we're smaller than we were. So, and I'm still pretty excited about a lot of stuff we have coming out. And I've been so focused on being in the background, and you know, and there is more to do again because, you know, at one time we had a huge staff, and now we're more on a streamlined basis with a lot of contracted editors and marketing, and that's working for us pretty well. But, I've been so focused on all this, I kind of haven't been out there in the public as much as I used to be, and, you know, I just pop up on press releases, so I myself, you know, I just kind of need to get out there and, you know, start rambling and babbling a little bit, and people can at least know that, hey, there's someone here.
I understand. Well, do you want to, you know, should we go over the list? And do we want to discuss, you know, obviously the Hasbro books have moved on to other publishers, but beyond those, are there other books that you'd like the public to know had to cancel the books? I mean, everyone understands the financial, realities of what's going on right now. And a lot of companies have to streamline. I certainly see that in radio. There's a lot of people that are sweating out, you know, if they're still going to have a job. And I'm sure, obviously, that's the case in publishing and certainly in comics. Are there other books that we, you know, you want to get out there and just clarify be in limbo?
Sometimes with a product, we'll stop. Like, with the Hasbro stuff, we had stopped working on G.I. Joe Helm, I think, over 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Is when we pretty much knew it was going to be over. And it was well over a year ago that we were done with that. So, I still kind of keep my mouth shut on some of that stuff. But, you know, I still every now and then, I get an email the other day saying, hey, keep on putting out those G.I. Joe books. And it's like, you know, it's awesome that, you still appreciate that. And, you know, I'm glad they like it. But, yeah, we haven't been doing those for quite some time. But, yeah, and, a lot of times, too, you know, when things are better, you're able to put out a lot more books. I don't know, there was a lot of projects that were kind of pretty much vanity projects, or start to get involved in working with, another creator on a book, and all of a sudden it's not maybe it's either not either losing a little bit of money or it's not making any money, but meanwhile you have staff going into it, and you know, when times get tough, that stuff just you can't keep doing it. I mean, you've got to really focus on your babies, and can't feed the neighborhood kids, sort of, you know, so to speak, I guess. And then if you do that and you really focus on that, then things start to get better, and you can start to slowly expand into, you know, more experiments again. But, like some examples are, I know there's some confusion there. We're not doing the Dungeons & Dragons titles. We haven't been doing those for a while.
Would that include Forgotten Realms then, or?
That is Forgotten Realms and Dragonlance. There's a lot of that. There's more confusion there in the bookstore market because things have such a much longer shelf life.
Certainly.
And we still get comments every now and then from sales reps and distributors asking, you know, when are the books going to be back in print? And, you know, but, so, yeah, I mean, there's those right now, Dungeons & Dragons, Halloween, Vampire Hunter D.
Okay.
That really just never got off the ground because there were a lot of creative differences with our side and with the Japanese creator and with digital manga that was in between. And before we really got any more invested in it, we just decided that, you know, it was better to walk away. My regret is that we did some promotion for it, I think a little prematurely. We were really excited about it, and I wanted to get the word out there, and I really probably should have held off. Dread Force was an awesome book that we sort of started just at the wrong time, and you know, I still in discussion with those guys, but haven't been able to do anything with that book. So hopefully that book will see the light of day, whether it's through us or someone else. But Rest. Right now, the project with Milo Ventimiglia, we're in discussions with someone else as to what's going to happen with that. So, but those are titles that I think people have sort of written off anyway. It's not coming out, but it's never been officially said, hey,
okay,
you know, these books are, you know, we're not putting these books out. Right now, Mercy Sparks is a brand new title that is definitely starting to get a following. I get a lot of positive fan mail on the book. That's never been a huge, giant, you know, hit license or anything like that. That's my own creation.
Yes.
The trade paperback just came out last week, so I'm really excited about that. We just got also released the first full miniseries on iTunes through Comixology, and it'll be coming out on Myverse as well. And then there was the Free Comic Book Day special.
Yes.
Second series. And then issue number 2 has come out for that as well. The Free Comic Book Day special was number 1 of the actual second series, and it was free. But, you know, right now, that was a book that was, you know, a loss leader, and we just have to... I'm discussing with Matt Murhoff, because he's still really passionate about the book, too, how we're going to continue that. So I definitely want to continue doing that book, and we will in some fashion. But unfortunately, it's on a hiatus.
Okay.
So we figure out what format it's going to be in. There's pages drawn of the following issue as well. It's in the works, and the plot is, everything's plotted out. So I know where I'm going with Mercy. It's just a matter of finding out how.
Okay.
Sheena, Queen of the Jungle was a title that we were in between series, and rather than we're right now discussing with the licensors what we're going to do with the next mini series that was solicited. I think that covers it for a lot of the books that there's some confusion on.
Okay.
Uh, So I'm pretty sure you'll be seeing more Sheena. And we also saw the trade paperbacks in stock and the Golden Age trades, which are awesome. With a lot of really good design went into those and showcasing the old stuff. And there's a huge demand for that character just in the public consciousness.
Certainly.
So, and it's also, you're going to see those popping up online as well. I think actually, the digital medium may be the way a lot of this stuff is getting out. And I'm extremely passionate about the way that the iTunes comics are just starting to blow up. I've always felt that, we tried with Pullbox Online to get things going. We were kind of first to bat, and we got covered in the Wall Street Journal for that and got a ton of press for it. But it was a little bit, one of those things is a little bit too soon.
Yeah, no, I understand. And that's kind of the nature of the Internet sometimes, that a good idea sometimes comes too soon, and the market isn't ready for it, and now it does seem like things are kind of adjusting to that.
Well, the key is just it's the mobile platforms. And
yes.
I wish that I would have been able to put more into just keeping Pullbox around and keeping it going. We never really lost anything from it, but, we were dealing with, I have no problem saying it. We're about a $2 million company, and we were dealing with about $500,000 in book returns.
Wow.
That just came, out of nowhere. And they came very quickly, and, that's what we've been dealing with for the past year. And it's finally only really just recently subsided, because the thing was in the bookstore market, they're allowed to return merchandise.
Yes.
Hell, they can pretty much return stuff forever. They can return something they bought about a year ago, because they're always reordering a little bit and returning it and reordering it. And the, it was Borders or Barnes & Noble. They actually straight up said, they slashed we're sorry, but we needed cash, and we just returned a shitload of stuff very quickly and not as precisely as we'd all like to. And now we're adjusting our inventory levels, and we'll start to reorder. So obviously I'm paraphrasing there. It's not what the guy exactly said. He was a little more tactful than me, but that's kind of what happened, with all the book chains across the country. So, but anyway, a big technological shift happens, one thing, it always takes much longer to happen, I think, than people think it's going to.
Definitely.
Because we've been trying to do digital comics forever.
Yes.
But for years now. But when it does finally happen, it's almost like it's taken so long to happen that everyone's just given up on it. And then when it does happen, it's like, boom, it's overnight. And you're kind of seeing that, I think, right now with a lot of the mobile comics and with all these new readers coming out. And if the Apple tablet comes out and there's more developments on the Google Android front and, all these different options and ways you can get the comics to read them, while you're just carrying them around. Completely, besides the, hundreds of thousands of people that read comics in the shops, get them from the shops every week, it opens up that entire market of people that, they'll just try something out for shits and giggles.
Sure.
They can add somewhere, and that shits, it's going to be called the shits and giggles factor. That could add up to, an extra 100,000 people if something is tied to a big property. So that to me is just more reason to be excited. And what I think, though, is going to happen is we've been talking about the shift from the periodicals to the graphic novels for 10 years now,
mm-hmm.
And it's going to be more like a Japanese model or a French model. But what's going to be different about us is, whereas they've had that for a long time, digital may become the way that you introduce a lot of all the new properties and all the new stories. And then once you see what has a demand, then you collect that into print and you're able to actually get it out there to people that prefer it in that format. You can also then, the work is done, you can really focus on what's going into the print and into the trade dress and the kind of extras that you can put into it. So, print's not going anywhere, but if anyone wants to survive just on print, I think they're done.
In the last couple months, I've seen on Sci-Fi Channel a couple motion comics pop up on Monday nights, and it looks like these are old productions that you guys did. I can't remember the name of the media company that put them together, but I saw, for example, the Voltron story that Mike Norton drew.
Yeah, no, that was crazy. That's I was completely amazed and impressed that that was Eagle One Media, or broker that deal with Sci-Fi Channel. They we did a deal with them some time ago, with between them and World Events, the licensors, to approve them to, you know, use our artwork for the DVDs. And they've been selling the DVD, they've been selling motion comic DVDs way ahead of the curve before anyone else was really doing these full-on motion comics online. But and I couldn't tell you to what degree of success they've met with that, but they you know, no, they had them on Sci-Fi Channel on Monday nights now, and it's pretty awesome. We have those issues too from, you know, that's actually going back about 6 years, you know, before anyone knew who the great Mike Norton was. And, and he was whittling away in our little offices. But yeah, no, he's I think they still look great. He doesn't like looking at stuff that's like 6 or 7 years old, but I think they're awesome. Those will be on a Comixology and Myverse as well, to download now. So it's some of that stuff actually, you know, looks pretty damn awesome on the screen too, because it was colored in that animated motion feature type of style.
Are they your two partners for digital comics? What kind of distribution are you going to use for digital comics?
Oh, right now, I mean, they're really leading the way. I'm making a point not to go exclusive with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that makes sense.
Everything's really experimental right now.
Yes.
And developing, and no one's walking up to you with a giant check saying, "Hey, give me all your stuff." You know, maybe they gave Robert Kirkman, you know, a couple million bucks, but but yeah, you know, just kind of testing it out, saying, you know, you want to see who's doing some there's a lot of opportunities for really clever marketing coming up, and you know, once this stuff really gets its footing, I know right now they're pretty much just inundated with getting content onto the site, so I'm focused on prioritizing which books are getting done first, and making sure that they're getting authored properly, and trying to take a look at those as soon as they get them done. And I mean, we have even without G.I. Joe and a couple other licenses, we still have a shit ton of backstock to put up there, and actually bringing in some other books as well from some other creators that you'll hear about soon. So they're We have a lot of content that we can put up there. So I really do think that, I mean, even if the downloads coming in are not huge, you know, we have enough of a library that it's going to still be pretty significant, and it's going to sort of be like putting out a couple of extra books every single month that, you know, weren't there before. And it's nice being able to actually take advantage of the backstock and sort of get some reward for basically as long as we've been around. I mean, 8 years now.
Yes.
And all that work has gone into this.
You mentioned Pullbox. You were in the digital comic business a few years ago. Does it make for an easier transition to these platforms of Comixology and the like?
I've never had a problem, you know, morphing the content to fit whatever is necessary. I mean, if there was a demand for the desktop publishers, hey, we would have been there. I mean, that's what we were trying to do. But just no one wants to sit down at their computer and read these things. I mean, no one, because there's thousands of people downloading them illegally. But the you know, it's just that mobile thing. I don't know. I can't even really explain it. I'm just sort of a gut thing. I mean, I'm not a 16-year-old kid who, you know, is completely grown up in the digital age. But I'm, you know, my early 30s, and something about this new tech. I just like reading them on the iPhone. I like the way panel to panel. I you know, like things about the Iverse method and the Comixology method and some of the other ones out there. I really like the way Comixology keeps the page together, and I actually, you know, I'm sure Scott McCloud's probably already talked about this, you know, it does some, you know, it kind of, in a way, it's completely true to the sequential art reading experience, and sometimes even enhances it, where, you know, there's one shot in Core, because that was a fun thing. Speaking of old stuff, me and Tim Seeley did a book together years ago called Core, and this fantasy world, Abaddon, that like intersects with our own, and there's a shot of like a double page spread where the character just stumbles upon this huge city, and when you in the comic book you turn the, you see the double page spread, you know, and here it just cuts to the little guy standing there and it says, you know, where am I, and then boom, then you touch it again and it pans out and there's this giant city that he's looking at, you know, stuff like that. I think it's you know, that gets my gets the nerd in me going. I mean, I really like that. But
sure, no, that may, no, you're absolutely right about that, and it is. It's those choices because of the platform that makes the storytelling different in its own way. I think that's neat.
It's the music model, you know. I mean, it's like you've got all these songs on iTunes there, and you know, Michael Jackson dies, and all of a sudden the next week, boom, they sell, you know, the top song on iTunes, and you know, I mean, it's still in record stores too. But everyone who's just sitting there thinking for a split second about it, they just fucking go to the site and they download it right away, and that's what you're going to see. Well, I mean, a good example is, okay, I just heard today Apple finally started approving the political comics. They wouldn't do that before, and I mean, when we launched our
Barack the Barbarian,
Barack the Barbarian, our homage to the president's love of Conan, we were in the third page of Chicago Sun-Times on a Saturday. We were mentioned on Saturday Night Live as a joke and like weekend update. We were on papers in the UK and Germany and the New York Post and then like the Drudge Report, and I was on like extremely right-wing sites as well as liberal papers and but everywhere. And I mean, good God, if we'd had like a link that people could have gone and downloaded, we would probably sold 50,000 downloads of that thing at least in a weekend. But now if you think about it, okay, that this stuff's all kind of dying down right now and everything, but hey, guess what? Two, 2012 elections come up, you post it. The same thing as if you have a property that's part of a license and, you know, it's been sitting there for 4-5 years. I mean, if our Voltron stuff, if there's a video game or a movie that comes out 2-3 years from now, boom, it's there. And yeah, I mean, it's the same concept as you can go back and print stuff, but this is instantaneous, never out of stock. And that's what's exciting about it. So you'll definitely see some original properties coming our way. I mean, the first one, although we have every intention of printing it, is going to be the Merch Girl book that I'm working on with Merz, the rapper, where we are going to release, we haven't even really put out any official announcement about this yet, but the format we decided is going to be 6 chapters every 2 weeks. There'll be a new chapter released, and it'll be with a new original song, and they're going to be 10-page stories with a new song. So for a total of a 60-page story that we can then collect into a one-shot format. We're going to play around with, you know, do we include a CD in here, and then we have the regular print version.
Oh, wow.
Maybe there's a print, you know, standard, like, perfect bound copy for the comic shops, but maybe we also release a special CD where we have a smaller version of it, you know, inserted in there. But it'll have been released. We'll have started bringing in some money from it digitally. We will have also been basically spreading the word that way the whole time. And we're also going to have, in some capacity, you'll be able to read it online, just maybe not as early as if you want to go buy it, and have snippets of the songs for you to check out. But, yeah, I mean, so that by the time the print version comes out, you know, you've got this thing that's a brand-new property, but it's had a lot of push behind it.
So it'll be a digital story plus a song.
Yep, and we haven't set any time for it. I mean, it's already in the works.
That's great.
But until I see enough finished art and we actually see the recorded songs produced, we're going to wait.
Okay.
before we dare commit to any sort of a release date on that. And then we have just a lot of other stuff, too, I'm excited about. So I'll probably call you up and bug you again.
It's a weird time, Josh, and it's funny that, you know, comic books are feeling it just as much as I think the rest of media is. And it is this, you know, the smartphones and, you know, the internet to a degree, but now really, yeah, the smartphones have really, you know, kind of reignited the whole idea of content and how to get it to people. And I think people are looking at, you know, old storytelling things and seeing them in new ways for the first time because, yeah, they can get them on their phones. And it's just a fun new way to view it as opposed to sitting in front of your TV or sitting in front of your computer monitor.
Well, and also, too, I mean, you know, how many times do you go to a shop and you try to buy you like a new book that's come out, it's a new creator-owned book from Image or it's some smaller, new property, and you finally, you know, you get issues 1, but then you never see issue 2 because they never order as many copies of issue 2.
Yep.
Sells out. So then you see issue three there by Larkin, another store, and you say, well, I'm not going to buy that because I don't know what the hell's going on. You know, even if you're still a person that likes to buy the print version and have that, it keep allows you to keep doing that without missing issues. Hext is a perfect example of that. I mean, I love that book, and I had, you know, I'd missed one of the issues and downloaded it and read it, and then I was able to, you know, get the next issue and have the whole thing. So
that's cool. Well,
yeah, we're still, you know, Hack Slash is still going. I mean, that book is approaching issue 30 now, which is pretty damn awesome.
You're damn right it is. Absolutely. I missed the Scream. Now, forgive me. I missed the Scream Awards. I don't know how did it do.
Oh well, we didn't win, but we were pretty sure we knew we weren't going to win, or we'd have probably gotten a little bit of a hint beforehand. I'm going to guess.
Okay.
But
consistently nominated, right?
Well, 2 years in a row we've been nominated for it, and that's pretty awesome. So
I saw on the Devil's Due site. I noticed that who is it? Kat Dennings is interested in.
Yeah, she. I mean, it's crazy the sheer buzz out there. I mean, I hope you know, Hollywood just, you know, I hope they're listening to all these people at the studio. You know, it's Kat Dennings. I mean, she actually, I forget what interview it was. It's right there on our website. But yeah, they asked her what kind of a comic movie she'd like to be in, because I think she'd even brought it up that she wanted to be in some kind of comic movie. And she says, oh yeah, you know what's an awesome sort of a female comic book character is Hack Slash. And you know, we're almost like we see that stuff in the press all the time now, and you know, different links, and it's flattering.
I'm certainly rooting for Tim, and I hope that I hope the movie does for him what the 30 Days of Night movie did for Steve Niles. You know, I mean, I think it is that kind of, you know, Hollywood explosion that can really make the difference in a book, and it would be nice to see that happen for you guys.
By the time that goddamn movie comes out, we will have a ton of back stock and paperbacks and omnibus and
definitely
digital downloads, so they'll be there for people to check out and discover.
No, and that's very cool. Absolutely.
So another completely crazy side note was the because I love Zombieland, and the main chicken there opposite Woody Harrelson. I mean, she actually would be really cool, Cassie Hack. Her name is Emily Stone, which is the name of like the main artist.
Yeah.
For a long time. And I've seen that actress before. I, you know, a couple of her movies. I had no idea what her name was. And,
yeah, she's in Superbad. Isn't she the one that Jonah Goldberg is interested in Superbad?
Yeah, I think she is one of. Yeah, that's. I know her. I know that I've seen her in some stuff, but I just can't remember where. But if so, Hack Slash, you know, like I said, Mercy Sparks in some version. We still have a lot of books in print, like The Nine Incidents, Demon Wars. And actually, those have a new potential on the digital side, too, because those are both attached to major authors, Whitley Strieber and Aria Salvatore.
Certainly.
New chance for exposure there. I lost my little cheat sheet of stuff, so I'm definitely going to forget some things. But right now, we're also, you know, full into production on Spartacus.
Yes, and I want to ask about Spartacus. So first, give us a description of Spartacus, because there's one that is just starting out, and people may not know about this book.
Spartacus is what we're doing in partnership with Starz Media. Spartacus Blood and Sand is the official title. And it's the new television show coming out on the Starz Network, produced by Sam Raimi, Rob Talbert, Stephen Knight. And it's starring Lucy Lawless and another actor, Andy Litchfield, as Spartacus himself. Lucy Lawless plays the evil queen, if you will. I'm blanking on the official Roman title, but it's really focusing on the life of these gladiators in the arena, and it's super intense, super overboard on crazy violence, and there's going to be violence and sex and nudity, and it's going to probably piss a lot of people off, but it's going to be awesome. So you can check out the trailer. That's linked on our website as well. There is the trailer for the show. The show doesn't come out until January, late January, so Starz is really working with us ahead of time to get the comic book out there. You know, we gave away a few thousand in San Diego, and they were heavily promoting it there. And there's a motion comic that's going to be debuting as well, using the artwork from our comic. So it's going to be like, you know, you can buy the book, you can get it online, you can see the motion comic later. I mean, there's all this stuff that's going to be available for it. And I'm pretty damn excited about it because it's exactly the kind of show that I would, you know, be seeing the previews for and definitely be setting my TiVo for. But no, story-wise, it focuses on, I mean, the story of Spartacus, which he was a gladiator that not much is known about him, but people are pretty certain there was this guy Spartacus was sold into slavery, thrown into the gladiator arena, and he led a rebellion, and the gladiators broke away from the authorities, and they lived out in the countryside for a few years, and actually survived and sorted off the armies. I think it was for a few years. I think they did eventually, you know, the man shut them down, but it was a pretty amazing story. And our comic book is focusing on a lot of the characters you're going to see come in pretty early on. I mean, that first season of the show that you don't really know much about. If you've read our comic book series, you'll already know their backstories. But their lives are all sort of affected by Spartacus, who's this new ultimate badass that come into their lives in the arena and is either somehow involved with, you know, in their lives now, or he's going to take them out and chop them up. But, like the first story, I mean, a lot of people still got the San Diego version, and it involves Arcadios, who's just like the ultimate badass. And, you know, he's like the star of the arena, and he finally comes up with this new guy, Spartacus, and, you know, we'll see what happens from there when you read the book. But the second issue deals with these two twins that are, you know, sort of these crazy feral guys that have grown up pretty much without parents, and there's a really twisted origin to that, and they've been terrorizing the countryside, and once the Roman soldiers start to show up dead, they themselves are captured and thrown into the arena, and you just got, you know, probably what it was really like back then, you know, that sometimes people are thrown in here because they're, you know, wrong place at the wrong time, and they just happen to be tough, and other times, you know, that's probably what some deserving people ended, you know, the fate of some deserving people had as well.
Well, and I love the original film from the 50s that Stanley Kubrick directed and Kirk Douglas starred in and produced. Peter Houstonoff and Laurence Olivier is in the film. Yeah. Tony Curtis is in the film. It really is one of the classic 50s Roman epics. And I agree with you that, and I'm glad to hear that the violence and the sexuality is going to be at a high level, because when you're dealing with those swords and sandals stories, I think it needs to be there. That's what I liked about the first Conan movie. And to be frank, I think it could have gone even farther. And it's one of the things that I like, too, about Mike Rell's Warlord, for example.
Every debaucherous and fucked up thing you've heard about the height of the Roman Empire, any of those stories you've heard, it's going to be in there.
Excellent, man.
Another big book for us is Jericho.
Yes.
Which, you know, millions of people, avid followers of the show. I mean, a lot of the fan mail letters we get and you know, we've got a pretty active message board going now. And they're really, really passionate fans who really love the show. And there's just something about the show really struck a chord with a lot of people. And, you know, it was really great character development. And it touched upon something. But it was sort of a victim of timing and the writer's strike and everything else. And, you know, a lot of people argue, you know, if it was canceled for the wrong reasons, and if you know, it's actually interesting. The ratings were still pretty high on the show, and it there's a lot of shows on major networks right now that you know, arguably don't even do as well. So we're really, you know, sounds cheesy, but you know, we're really honored to be able to continue this because we're doing season three. We're working with the show's producers and writers. This is considered the canon of, you know, what is coming after the season two cliffhanger. And for anyone that doesn't know, I mean, Jericho is about, you know, there's 23 cities that are devastated in nuclear attacks all across America at the same time. So it was an orchestrated attack. No one knows if it's a terrorist attack or if it was domestic or foreign. And, you know, you're just coming at this from the standpoint of this small town. They don't know what's going on. They don't know what's happened. And by the time they do start to have communication with the outside world, you know, like a bunch of guys show up and they're fully armed and they have tanks and helicopters and camouflage and weapons. But, you know, they say they're from the U.S. government, but then all of a sudden someone else shows up and they say they're from the new version of the U.S. government. You know, who do you trust? You know, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, is there a good guy or a bad guy? You know, it dealt with all of those themes. And at the end of issue two, or season two, Texas was sort of like the one, the country had been divided into two parts again, where, you know, one side was allying with one version of the new government, and the other side's allying with the new version, another version, and Texas is the one state that hasn't decided yet, and that's when a lot of the conspiracy starts to unfold, and it just really left on a huge cliffhanger, and that's where we're picking up. So
is there going to be any kind of print version to recap those first two seasons? How are you going to handle that in print in terms of getting those people up to speed that may be checking the story out for the first time?
We're recapping it in the first issue. We're not spending a lot of time on it, but we're definitely, you know, taking into consideration those people that have not watched the show before. We may go back and do some sort of an adaptation that's been discussed. We haven't decided what we're doing there yet.
Okay.
Right now we're focused on getting the first issue out. We're supposed to be out in late October, but with the actor likenesses and everything, we wanted to, that took a little longer. And then there's so much going into the continuity of the story. It's admittedly behind schedule, but it's going to be out November the 25th, and it looks beautiful. There's actually a 8-page preview up at the Things From Another World website right now.
Oh, cool.
Which you can find on our website. We actually have a microsite just for this book, JerichoComic.com.
Okay.
That's where you can sign up for updates. There's a message board, and we have links to all the previews there. So this will be out in stores that day. We're also going to have downloadable version on iTunes. We've had the Ashcan in San Diego limited to 500 copies. We have that Ashcan is also available for free to check out online, or downloadable for iTunes if you just want to check it out and sort of see some of the sketches and the production going into the book.
That's great.
There's a ton of fan communities for this too. There's you know, Radio Free Jericho, Jericho, Kansas. There's a number of them, and it's awesome because they just tend to spread the word themselves.
Oh yeah, you know, I've seen them at conventions, and I've seen a few Jericho panels. Yeah, you're right. I really think this show was on the bubble for the longest time to possibly come back. I even remember last year, the CW crapping out on Sunday nights, and all of their new programming failed, so they slipped in all these Jericho reruns to, you know, kind of have something to run on Sunday nights, and, you know, the ratings for that were actually pretty good. Are the series writers, are they providing a Bible, and then have you got writers that are following that Bible? How does that work as far as writing the comic?
It is. Right now, I mean, it's the actual TV show writers that created this stuff in the first place.
So that's cool.
They're sitting in a room, they're breaking it, and actually they're working with Jason M. Burns, Curse of the Werewolf, and a number of other titles. People are pretty familiar with him. He's actually helping to flesh a lot of the stuff out. So we could come up with our own stories as to what would happen, but the fact that these guys are doing it themselves is really making it a canon and something that,
yeah,
making it something the fans are really, really behind. And they're in a way, you know, they kind of wish it could have been a TV show, but now they're not constrained to budget, so they can have these crazy battle scenes and all the jet fighters they want, and, you know, they can go wild on the military aspects and stuff, and they were really constrained by their budgets before, that's cool.
Are there other books you wanted to promote?
Yeah, we have the last issue of I Am Legion, wrapping up that miniseries, is actually on its way from the printer now.
Very cool.
We'll be soon putting out another crazy intergalactic cosmic sort of trippy book, United Free Worlds, that is on its way from Fantasy Prone. We have Zombies Today at the World. There's another issue of that on the way. Guy Davis, Jerry Frizen, take on zombies. That book's awesome. It's like the zombie outbreak happens, but they aren't really out to kill everyone. They're just sort of these dead people that linger around that you have to deal with. So we're like, hey, grandpa's dead, and he just sits in that chair all day. What do we do with him? And the story sort of unravels from there, but it's definitely, I haven't seen a take on zombies like that before.
Cool.
There's a beautiful Hack/ art book coming out. It's going to be oversized 11x17, and just has all these just great, huge images of, you know, from Hack/. It was all done in-house. Tim Feely worked really closely on it, and really excited about seeing that thing in our, you know, actually in our hands. We're waiting on that to come in from the printer. I think he had Jericho, Spartacus, Hackslash, Hackslash Art Book, March Hero, Lamb Legion, United Free World, Zombies That Ate the World. Oh, Barack the Barbarian 3 is on the way, and number 4 is being wrapped up soon. Everything else, I think that kind of covers what's in the works. So we're still working on a lot of stuff. You know, some of the books that were canceled or on hiatus, I just really want people to know it's like it kills us every time we have to do that, and it's not something that's done flippantly. You know, it's if there was a way to get the book out, or if there is a way to get the book out, we'll get it out. But you know, I mean, you're going to the store every week, and if you got the first issue of something, you don't get the second. It's like an age old story for a comic fan, with, you know, from a number of different publishers. It's always frustrating when it happens, and considering the economy we're in, I'm feel really fortunate that, you know, we do have the books that we do, and you know, it's something that, you know, it takes the comic cycle works so far in advance. You know, by the time you see something in previews, you know, it's already been 2 months in the works, and it doesn't come out for another couple of months.
Yes.
So you're dealing, as a publisher, you're dealing with like even if you're if you're a big publisher, it takes longer. If you're the tiniest publisher ever, it still takes you like 6 months to make any significant changes on anything. So, and then, you know, from the time you start to, like, you know, make changes to anything, it's going to take 6 months to even see it to begin, and then you go through another 6 months, and you finally start to see, you know,
how it's being received.
What's coming out, what's
Shaping
up. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this is a good time to really focus on what we're doing now and where we're going. And, you know, we've had it's like the anniversary since the world went nuts. But surprisingly, I'm really glad to see, you know, how strong comics have been doing, and it does seem to be that industry-wide, they seem like they're as strong as they were a year ago. And everyone always said that, you know, comics do well in a recession because it's a cheap form of entertainment, even with the prices going up. You know, $3.99 printing prices and shipping prices and everything are sort of forcing publishers to raise their prices, but they're still seems like they're doing well. I mean, I know that's opening a whole other can of worms for that discussion that I would rather avoid right now.
I'll ask one question, and that's okay if you don't have an answer right now. But no, honestly, that is something that I was wondering in general, in terms of are the economic realities making everyone rethink the packaging of the monthly floppy magazine? You know,
I apologize to any retailer who was having a good time, and I just brought up the feelings of Marvel rage they have right now for all those titles coming out. I don't know. They're like I said, it's a very simplistic overview of it, but print is not going anywhere. But if you're just trying to do print, you're not going to survive.
Yeah, I hear you.
It is getting harder and harder to test things out in print because, you know, when there's, you know, 50 new Marvel books coming out and they're all of a sudden all $3.99, it does have an effect on every other publisher except Marvel and DC, pretty much.
Sure. You know?
And they even have an effect on each other. I mean, when it comes to what does the retailer order, even if the fan who is sitting there shopping on the racks, you know, would try the book out, it really makes the retailer less and less and less inclined to try out a book and order something from previews if one of their fans didn't, or one of their customers didn't come and pre-order it. I mean, and how fucked up is that? I mean, what other industry in the entire world, or, you know, in any other medium or form of entertainment only gets their content that way? You know, it's like the direct market was just such a cool thing, you know. It's such a love-hate thing. It gives people the opportunity to enter the market very easily, but at the same time, it's sort of it's enclosed, you know, boys club or little closed circuit niche group that just, you know, is going to eventually, you know, it's evolving now because it has to. You know?
Yes. and it can't keep feeding off itself.
Yeah.
No, I understand, man. And I
no one is going to put out their black and white Ninja Turtle book anymore.
Right.
Sell 3,000 copies on the first issue, and 18,000 copies on the second issue, and 100,000 copies on the third issue. You know, and then keep selling out. I mean, that's just that's going to happen online. Or they're going to build up a following on a webcomic, and then they're going to put out their graphic novel, and that's going to sell 100,000 copies through the comic shops and through the bookstores and through direct orders. So.
Yeah, I'm very curious, and I'm sure everyone is, in how this affects the direct market stores and how they are going to have to obviously change as well. And you're right. I mean, and I, as someone who kind of grew up seeing them literally when they first came out and being so excited and just the novelty of, much like a record store, there being just an exclusively comic shop was just insane. In the in the late 70s and early 80s, when I saw it here in Chicago, and to really see it rise, thrive, and then the collapse in the 90s, and then the restructuring, and now again with the encroachment of digital, facing the same questions that the mom and pop bookstores and record stores have had to as well, in terms of how do they survive in this new kind of impulse buy, world. Whereas you say, I think it does. It makes a great opportunity for customers and for publishers to be able to, capitalize on that kind of impulse buy. But also,
blur into like Blockbusters are selling, toys, and Barnes and Nobles are selling clothes and toys, and
Target
furniture and video games and more. I don't know. Just like we're gonna have like in the future, they're gonna finally all merge together. We're gonna have food store, entertainment store. we're gonna have different. I don't know. When we can finally download food, then we're all fucked. We're just gonna we'll be in a state of complete bliss, yet boredom and economic confusion.
I'm telling you, man. No, it's
think about it. I mean, the comic shops have been evolving, just like everyone else. But the if I was a retailer, honestly, even less, more so if I was a Barnes & Noble or a Borders, I'm sure they are. I mean, very concerned about what the hell is going to happen to us, or what do we need to turn into and turn into it fast. So we don't end up like Blockbuster, who's now becoming a bunch of kiosks, or who will eventually just become like a brand name that's on your TiVo and your Comcast box.
Exactly. No, you're right. Well, and even Borders, I mean, Borders is... been hit hard on this economic thing, as you were saying earlier in your specific example, but I would just know in general Borders is, they're fighting for their life too. And yeah, I think a lot of these brick and mortar stores.
To the tune of like $380 million or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, between what I've known, I'm estimating it's about $1 billion of merchandise that was returned to the two publishers last year.
Wow.
Just, not just comics, but in publishing as an industry.
Sure.
But, comic shops have been evolving. I mean, as far as already, how many, remember when they just sold comics, I mean, it's like direct market started, what, early 80s? And then, I came into it, I'm 32, and I really I collected G.I. Joe comics. That was pretty much it when I was a kid. my dad always read Conan and Thor and Spider-Man, but I just mostly remember I would read Conan's and I'd get my G.I. Joe's, and every now and then I'd buy something else, like a Transformers or whatever. And then when the Batman movie came out in 89, I was like 12 or 13, and, I was completely, that movie shit works. I saw that movie, I was like, oh my god, what? Batman's a badass? I didn't know that. And I went out and bought all the fucking Batman comics I could find. That's the first time I, begged my mom to drive me to a comic book shop. And then beg for some money to buy some. But even then, comic stores still sold mostly comics. And then they, I remember everyone bitching about prices and everything years ago and starting to order more toys and more clothes and more, higher purchase price point products.
Mm-hmm.
And then McFarlane Toys boom happened and the technology improved so people could make shorter run toys. So, yeah, that's why now everyone thinks of a comic shop. They think of some comics here, and now they think of a place with not just toys and shirts, but a bunch of graphic novels, and who knows what they're going to look like down the road. So I'm sure maybe they'll just be selling the readers that you read the comics on, and there'll be some merchandise based on those characters, and they'll have a select amount of graphic novels. I don't know. I'm sure that's a whole subject for a series of podcasts.
Well, and unfortunately, I don't think anyone's going to have the answers. We're just going to see how it naturally evolves. You know,
everything I said here today is probably completely just full of shit, and it's probably going to be completely different next week.
Well, let's hope not, Josh. No, that's – hey, man, honestly, I think, as you say, a lot of businesses are going through this same kind of transition, and it sounds like you've got a lot of good product to focus on and offer to people, and also, as you say, interesting new platforms to explore. So we're all kind of, you know, at the beginning of this experiment. Here's hoping we all come out of it the other end okay. But no.
You know what? It's not boring.
Yeah. Hear.
And that's a good thing.
The good news is there's some good Devil's Due product out there and more coming. So very excited about Spartacus, also Jericho, and, of course, Mercy Sparks, Hack Slash, Barak the Barbarian. So thanks for your time, and we look forward to the new product.
Thank you.
That's Devil's Due publisher Josh Blaylock, and that'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress letting you know that there's some big changes coming to Word Balloon. All positive. Don't worry, you're still going to get the same show that you want, but more. Details to follow in the episodes ahead this month in November. All I can say is keep looking at wordballoon.com and keep listening for upcoming podcasts for more information on the way. Until that, don't forget to look for Word Balloon in all the usual places. You can find us at newsarama.com. We're at iTunes. Of course, wordballoon.com, where you'll find well over 300 shows featuring comic book creators and other notables from the pop culture world. Questions or comments about the show? Visit the Word Balloon message board at wordballoon.com or email me, john@wordballoon.com. You can follow me on Twitter, John Word Balloon, or of course I'm on Facebook as well. But until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2009.